an honor to have our good friends from the First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe. I want to welcome Andrew Black and Harry Eberts. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Our pleasure. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, so I got to ask you, you know, you've had some vaccination clinics there at your church here in Santa Fe. How have they been going?
Well, I'll start off then. This is Harry, and they've been fantastic, actually. We've had long lines outside of our patio doors on Grant Street, close to the convention center, and it's been a festive occasion, and people are grateful to be there and happy that that a church is opening its doors to do this kind of thing.
Well, you know, we're glad that you're doing it, Pastor Harry and Pastor Andrew. So thank you for doing that. We really appreciate it. Now, First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe is having another vaccination clinic, aren't you?
Well, it's starting again next Monday, 12 to 4. Same place, same time, and same people giving the vaccinations. And we'll be there as well to welcome people with some hot chocolate and marshmallows, as we did before, and a smile and a welcome. So there it is.
Well, Andrew, looked like there was a lot of people signed up last week. Do you have the same waiting list this coming week?
Yeah, we're getting there. We had 228 people last week come out. We've had two shot clinics, one in late December on December 27th, and this one. And we've given out almost 400 shots in 2 days, which in really actually only in 8 hours. So it's pretty remarkable to see kind of the need. A lot of kids, a lot of kids 5 to 11, a lot of kids that are, you know, kind of get that 12 into 18 range, probably 50, 60 of those at their last clinic. We also had a lot of first time folks getting their vaccine for the first time, probably 10 to 15 of those folks from our last clinic. So yeah, our clinic is on January 31st, which is Monday from 12 to 4. We have Pfizer and Moderna. Everybody's welcome. Obviously we can also vaccinate youth, 5 to 18 with a parent's permission slip. So, all of that's available again. I think, you know, we're seeing a little slower uptake this time. I mean, the fortunate thing about our previous two clinics is they were during the holidays. So we had Martin Luther King Day was our last one. And also at the same time, we were kind of falling right after Christmas. So I think that made it fortunate for folks to be able to get off work and get down to those clinics. But we're hoping this Friday that, you know, being on your station and being able to promote it, that more folks come out and, you know, get their booster shots or get their, you know, their first time vaccines and also make sure that their kids are safe and vaccinated. Obviously, last week we experienced a really tough situation where the schools were closed because of such outbreaks. And, we're obviously trying to avoid that. And most of all, make sure that our kids are safe and our families are safe.
As a friendly reminder, let our listeners know, remind them again where First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe is at.
Well, it's 208 Grant Avenue. It's right across from the community center. It's on a little triangle. It's about 2.5 blocks from the plaza. And we've been there since 1867.
Great. Now, Pastor Harry and Pastor Andrew, why did the church decide to get involved, to be a site for a vaccine clinic? Tell us a little bit about the thinking behind the rationale there.
Well, I'll start, Andrew. The thinking simply is that we serve the community. We are all part of one community. And when there's a need out there, when we see there's an issue that we can address in some way, we try to do it. And so this need is all about trying to keep the community safe, trying to keep individuals safe, families safe in a situation of a terrible pandemic. We've seen a lot of heartache, as everyone has. We've seen people die. We've seen people who are just broken up because they've lost loved ones. And we pray for new people every week who's lost family members in our church, and maybe relatives of members of our church. And the need is so great that we figured, what can we do? And the best way we can do that is be a site, be a host, be a way that we can be visible to people, hoping that we can be a safe space for them to come as a faith community. They know it's hopefully a good place to be, and that friendly people are going to welcome them. And it's in many ways our obligation as people who follow Christ to serve others. Mm-hmm.
Andrew, go ahead and expand.
I would just dovetail off that. I mean, fundamentally, it comes down to how do you love your neighbors? And you know, in a noisy, violent, hurried world with lots of suffering and injustice, you know, looking out upon that world, how do we, you know, best serve? And what can we do to make a difference? And how do we, you know, help alleviate the challenges of frontline workers and you know, try to meet the needs of what's going on in our healthcare community? And so, you know, I think it was just kind of fundamentally looking out at the world with the eyes of faith and saying, hey, there's a huge need here. And do we have the resources and capability and gifts and compassion to meet it? And that's kind of fundamentally, you know, what myself and you know, Pastor Eberts kind of, you know, really, you know, focused on in terms of training our congregation and working with them on, you know, how to volunteer and kind of be there for people in need in our community. And the really cool thing is, though we're a downtown church, I mean, literally we've had people from all over the community come out and to our vaccine clinics. We've got a lot of youth from the South Side, a lot of families from the South Side come out. And I think, you know, being a church, we're a trusted resource to the community. And you know, we're a little bit of a different host site. We're not your typical public health site, right? So I think that that's also, you know, been really important. And I think a lot of folks feel like they'll be cared for and that there's a sense of real customer service there when they come to our church. And we've been able to meet, you know, we've given shots to people who are literally 100 years old and 90 years old, and they're able to pull up in their car because they're not able to get out of their car. And so we, you know, we really kind of pride ourselves on making it as positive an experience as it can be, and also making sure that we kind of help folks, you know, with however they come and meet them where they are.
You know, hearing Pastor Eberts talk about, did you say hot chocolate?
I said hot chocolate. Yes, indeed. That was in front of us the whole time. Hot chocolate and marshmallows as well.
Fabulous, fabulous. Well, you know, I got to say, having a festive, friendly environment goes a long, long way. A welcoming environment goes a long, long way for many people getting their shots. Children, I know that my daughter, when we got her shots, she held on to her little stuffed animal. And having a comfortable environment is important to people to be able to get their shot. Also, a place that's welcoming, non-judgmental, so to speak. I know that it's a lot of folks out there still trying to decide if they're going to get the vaccine or get their second dose or get their booster. Also important to have that welcoming atmosphere.
Yeah. It's been really cool. I mean, I watched some of our church volunteers actually went up to a 10-year-old girl the other day, and, you know, she was scared, you know, and she was with her dad. And so they asked her if she wanted some hot chocolate, and you could just see kind of the fear and the anxiety dwindle down. And she realized that these people are here to take care of us, you know, that they want her to have a good experience. They want her to be safe, and they want her not to be just safe that day, but they want her to be safe long term. And so it was just really cool to watch some of our, you know, our deacons and stuff like that at the church, you know, tending to people in the line and seeing if they needed anything, helping them fill out permission slips, you know, answering their questions. And that's just, I think, a really different way that we've kind of gone about this is just trying to realize that some people may be coming with uncertainty or anxiety, doing our best to answer questions or get them the best information available. But at the same time, also realizing that, you know, there is an importance of hospitality. I mean, one of the things that's most important in the Christian faith, I think, is really that sense of deep hospitality and welcoming. And our church prides ourselves on that.
You know, I want to ask Pastor Eberts, in just a moment about and maybe any personal experiences that you've had. But Andrew, I was hoping that maybe you could share once again this week, as you did last week, you had shared a personal story of when you were in the hospital with your daughter. Mm-hmm. I was wondering if you could share that story for our listeners that didn't hear that. And Pastor Eberts, obviously, you're welcome to expand and share your own if you have one. But Andrew, if you could just...
Sure. You know, so my daughter was born last July, and about a week after she was born, she stopped breathing. I ended up giving her CPR, and she ended up in Colorado Children's Hospital. And they originally diagnosed her with COVID, and we ended up in the COVID ICU unit, which is the neonatal intensive care unit for children, with our daughter. We spent 4 days there, and I watched as a young mother across the hall from us, who tested positive with her, you know, I believe it was her 3-year-old daughter, was basically quarantined and was not allowed to leave the hospital because she was COVID positive, and she had to stay. She had a choice to either kind of go back to the work and world that she was living in or to be with her daughter. And she was faced with an impossible choice. And she literally was quarantined for 10 days in the room with her daughter, praying to God and in this sense of isolation and loneliness that her daughter would survive. Her daughter was incredibly sick. And I think she was incredibly scared. And at the same time, she couldn't have any visitors. She couldn't go anywhere. I kind of let her know through gestures that I was praying for her across the hallway. We were fortunate in the sense that my daughter had been misdiagnosed. It was a false positive test. They actually found out that it was something else. And we were able to leave the hospital after 4 days. My wife and I had tested negative. And so we were able to kind of come and go. But because of this mother being positive, they obviously didn't want her infecting the other healthcare workers, and they obviously couldn't have her coming and going. And so she had this really impossible choice to either leave and leave her daughter there or to stay and be quarantined with her daughter. And she obviously stayed, I think, as any really loving mother would do. But she was faced with this other situation of having to have her kids cared for that were outside of the hospital, and her family and her work obviously were put on complete hold. And, I share that story because anyone who has seen a situation like that and seen firsthand what COVID can do, especially with little children. I think a lot of people think that, oh, this will never happen to me, until it does, right? And it's one of the worst case scenarios that any parent would want to have, to see their young baby or their toddler, or even their elementary school age or high school kid, really, really sick. And no one ever thinks it's going to happen to them until it does. And the reality is, I think once you've seen firsthand the inside workings of a hospital and a neonatal intensive care ICU unit, that's dedicated to COVID, that'll make you forever want to have mercy and compassion and love for anybody who's going through such suffering and to be there. And also as a pastor, recognizing that there's people that are there right now and they're isolated and they feel cut off from the world and they feel lonely and they feel like they can't have visitors, and it's brutal. And, making sure that, as faith communities that we're praying for those folks, but, sometimes there's opportunities to stand outside the hospital and even the hospital windows and just say, hey, I'm praying for you. We love you. Because I think that, folks can still look out their windows. Folks can the nurses need to know that, the doctors need to know that. And it's really, really important that we just don't lose sight of the humanness of this, that these are real people, real stories, real people with jobs and families. And I saw all that firsthand. And so for me, I'm forever changed and recognize that, whatever I can do to make a difference to alleviate the suffering for people in our community or families, I'll do it. Pastor Harry has some other really personal stories that he can share, and I'll let him do that.
Thank you, Andrew, for sharing that. That's a powerful experience. I know witnessing pain firsthand is something that none of us want to have to do in life, because it hurts. Pastor Eberts, I'm sure you've, as Andrew said, you've probably seen a bit of your fair share as well.
Well, I go along with what Andrew is saying about all the heartache out there, and the heartache comes from another side too. My father was a pastor for 40 years, and he died a year ago, July, not of COVID, but of lymphoma. But we are still yet waiting to have a service for him. He was known across the country, wrote books, all these things. People know him, but we've never had a chance to come together because of the pandemic. We don't want to be in a situation where we might be a super spreader event. And so we have to grieve and remember kind of alone, not as a family, because we want to be respectful of other people and make sure that we can be safe when we do so. So it comes in all sorts of forms, and it comes deep, deep down. You lose a family member, COVID or not, and this pandemic is still affecting you. And so the grief every Sunday I see in people's eyes as they share what's gone on with their families across the country as well, losing somebody. You just don't forget these things.
It's difficult during the pandemic that I have seen many families lose loved ones, and that process of grieving is just not possible, as you had mentioned, Pastor Eberts, in many circumstances. So that is tough when we're not able to grieve people that we've lost, for sure. Now, wanted to ask a little bit about First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe. Again, friendly reminder, next Monday. What time do we get in line for the hot cocoa and vaccine?
Well, come early to make sure you get a cup. Hot chocolate is hot. But it's at 12 noon until 4 in the afternoon. It's the same as it was a week ago Monday. And welcome all.
We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to return with Andrew Black, Harry Ebert's First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe in just a moment. This is KSWV.
COVID is surging. Hospitals are full. People are really sick. Get tested. Get vaccinated. Get boosted. Please help our healthcare workers. VaccineNM.org.
Okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's our pleasure and honor to be visiting with Harry Ebert's Andrew Black, First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe Vaccination Clinic next Monday. Now, Andrew, Harry, what's the best way for folks to get signed up there?
Yeah, they can register through the Department of Health website. You know, basically, the Department of Health has a website where you can go and check out. You know, you just Google vaccines New Mexico, and you can find it. And basically, they can register. You know, click on the City of Santa Fe, click what you know. You can go down and scroll by date, and you'll see the First Presbyterian Church event on the 31st. You can click that, and then you'll just put in your information, and you'll be able to register online. We also take walk-ups, so you can walk up if needed. It's always a little easier to get all your information in earlier, and that'll make your experience go faster. But we also take walk-ups because we want to make sure that we're, meeting the community where they are. And some folks have a little bit of trouble with technology. Some folks, can't understand necessarily how to navigate that system, or maybe aren't as handy with some of that stuff. And so we want to make sure that we're accessible to everybody, and we do take walk-ups. So that's an opportunity as well.
Pastor Ebert's Pastor Black just got a text in the studio. I think it's so awesome that they're holding a vaccination clinic at the church. In case a person is still feeling a little worried or they need a little extra prayer, will there be staff there to help pray with them? And let's see.
The answer is absolutely.
Okay. And it's a nice long, I'll send you the text here, but they say, please let them know our community says thank you. They said, I'm sure there's going to be staff there for prayers before they get their vaccine. I'm sure there's going to be pastoral staff to help encourage and pray for those who still feel a little bit scared. Just need a little extra bit of God's grace as they make that decision.
Mm-hmm. Andrew and I will be there. Yes, indeed. And our staff will be as well. So we are always available.
This is a big decision for folks. I know that if someone hasn't been vaccinated yet, it is not because the vaccines have not been available. It's because they have yet to make that decision. They're at a roadblock, whether they don't trust the science behind mRNA vaccinations. They don't trust the government. They don't trust government leaders telling them what to do with their bodies. They would rather maybe look at other alternatives like ivermectin and vitamins. They're just not there yet. And knowing that there's going to be people on staff there to pray with them as they try to make this decision, I'm sure is going to go a long way for people that are working on this decision at this point.
Yeah. I really appreciate that question. This is nothing new to the church. You think 2000 years ago, a few days after Jesus was crucified, the feeling of the disciples, right? A lot of fear, misinformation, they're behind the locked doors. The Gospel of John says, and Mary comes to them and tells them that she has seen the risen Christ, and they don't believe her. There's a lot of skepticism, a lot of misinformation. They just don't know what to believe. There's a lot of fear, a lot of doubt. And of course, in that, the Gospel of John tells the story of kind of the famous story of the quote unquote doubting Thomas, right? That Thomas says, unless I feel, the hands that have been pierced in the side, right? And by the nails and the piercing, I will not believe. And so of course that story gets lifted up though. And we tend to think about the focus on the doubts of Thomas, but the real point of that story, I think, is In the midst of fear and doubt, what does Jesus do? He pulls Thomas closer. He has him touch his hands. He realizes that this is a person who has been traumatized, that he has watched his best friend, you know, die in a very public and brutal way. And so what does he do? He doesn't tell Thomas, you know, chastise him and criticize him for not believing. He does what? He says, come feel, come closer to me. You know, in the face of doubt and despair and misinformation and fear and skepticism, we have a God who pulls us closer, a God who loves us, a God who, you know, sends others to encourage us. And so I think that that's one of the things that's really, really important. And of course, you know, that gospel kind of, you know, story ends with that idea of, you know, you have seen and, you know, kind of blessed are those who have not seen, right? That they can still step out in faith. And so that's what I would encourage folks to do, is realize, you know, be honest with where you are. It's okay if you have fear. It's okay if you have doubts. It's okay if you're worried or concerned or anxious. There's many biblical stories that have those very same themes going on. And yet at the same time, in that story of Thomas, you see a God who pulls us closer, who invites us into those wounds and who cares for us and doesn't, you know, criticize us, you know, us for the lack of faith, but instead encourages us and says, you know, kind of move forward. And of course, Thomas then gives one of the most profound confessions in all the Gospels, because he has the strength of a God who pulls him closer in the midst of that fear and doubt and uncertainty.
Seems like, is that what First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe is doing, Harry? Bringing people closer, pulling them closer.
Well, no doubt about it. And just to go along with that, you know, the culture teaches us not to trust anybody, it seems, anymore, to build up walls instead of taking them down. And our job, I see, as a church, faith community, is to build relationships, build community, be out there, have these difficult conversations, go deep, listen a lot instead of talking all the time, hearing where people are coming from, listening to their fears and seeing their tears and their fear in their eyes. And then we go from there. And so building community is so important to us as a church, so that we might feel part of it and that we can, you know, kind of go hand in hand, even in a pandemic, that symbolic hand in hand throughout this journey of ours together.
Someone hearing both of you says, text came in that said, amen. Okay.
Well,
I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, and I would just like to build off exactly what Harry's saying. I think, you know, in the political and religious world that we live in, we can very much get caught up in debates that make very real issues into abstract and theoretical issues. And, you know, we get into this kind of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin thing with COVID, I think. And, you know, it reminds me very much of kind of when the religious elite would challenge Jesus, you know, for healing on the Sabbath, right? Of course, Jesus wasn't so concerned about the abstract and theoretical rules at that point, you know, but about love and how to meet the immediate needs of suffering around him and how to put love into action. And I think that's the real question. I mean, how do we best serve and bring love and justice and mercy to our world? You know, Jesus didn't get caught up into this theoretical debate of who is my neighbor is what the lawyer asked him, right? And he then, you know, very practically gives the story of the Good Samaritan and how this man, you know, healed the man who was laying there dying on the side of the road. And we have many people that are in that same case today, you know, and people who are vulnerable, who are suffering, who are hurt on the side of the road of life. And so I think that that's one of the things that we really have to be honest with as a church and as religious leaders, is that we can get sucked into these abstract theoretical debates. But at the end of the day, we have to realize that New Mexico right now is fourth in terms of COVID deaths per capita. You know, thousands of people have been lost in our state. You know, hundreds of people are currently hospitalized. You know, the situation is so bad that we don't have enough teachers to teach in our schools. You know, teachers are dying. Other public health workers, bus drivers, folks like that are dying. And so I think the questions that we're asking aren't the right questions. I think the questions that we need to be asking are, how do we best serve? How do we look out at this groaning world that is in so much need of service and realize, how can we best make a difference? And there's so many different ways. You know, for us, it's maybe hosting a shot clinic, but it's also being compassionate to those healthcare workers, you know, providing brownies and cookies and stuff like that for them, or, you know, letting them know that they're encouraged. You know, some folks have decided to adopt COVID orphans. There's many children that no longer have parents. There's so many different ways that we can serve. And I think that's the real question. You know, I think that we get caught up in in all these abstract theoretical questions. And as people of faith, we need to remember that the greatest among us is our servant. And, you know, we need to ask, how do we best serve? And it really reminds me of a little bit of President Kennedy's wisdom when he said, you know, ask not what this country can do for you, but what you can do for this country. I think we need to come back to that place and realize, you know, what is it that we can do to make a difference in our community and our country, and not make it all about us. And that's sometimes the greatest sacrifice, right? That we all think that our lives are about us. But I think one of the things that religion teaches is your life is not about you. And how do you best serve others and love others and care for others? And that's the question, I think.
What about folks that say, just don't like the government telling me what to do? And, you know, freedom of religion, I want to be able to live my life the way I want to. I'm not going to be told to live my life one way or the other, because if I open the door to this, then it's going to open up the door to something else.
Well, there's that trust again. And, you know, we live in a culture where there's so many my people, my property, my rights, my beliefs. And in reality, we live in a community where we're all together in this thing, and to be able to function as a community that will be healed and will thrive means that we're all in this together. We can't just be individuals trying to live our lives separately. That's our faith. That goes back to the Aramaic language where Jesus talked about unity and harmony in the universe. It's not a dual verse, it's a universe. We're all in this together. And so I'm just saying, let's try it.
Yeah.
It might work.
And I would build off of Pastor Harry. I mean, there is that deep sense of interconnectedness. And, you know, the First Amendment guarantees the freedom of religion. But this freedom always, of course, occurs within bounds. And there's always a balance between freedom and flexibility and accountability and responsibility. I mean, you all can think of those more egregious situations. You know, think of Waco, right, where there's this freedom of religion that, of course, gets a little out of bounds and starts doing a lot of harm to people. There's been, you know, past instances of people doing harm to young girls, for example, in the name of religion. And so that's where I think that there's always these bounds and limitations on these kind of things. And obviously, it's, you know, something that I always say, the Apostle Paul encourages us to be prayerful and careful. And he really talks about that kind of challenge in Romans, about that kind of obedience to civil authorities. And at the same time, you know, most importantly, we have to be obedient to Christ, and we got to find that balance. And I think it's one of those things that we've got to be really prayerful and careful and discerning and thoughtful. This is not something that we should just go look to a chat room for and then think we've got the answer. We need to be doing this in a really thoughtful, communal way, in a discerning way. And we also have to realize that, you know, when it comes to something like disease and public health, there is that balance, right? That, you know, it's not just about my life, but I also have to realize that if I'm spreading this disease and spreading it to children who are unvaccinated or to older folks, you know, I may be doing harm. And of course, our faith, I think, really causes us to, you know, question and focus on doing no harm. And so I think we have to kind of realize that we are in that interconnected reality. And if COVID has taught us anything, it's that reality that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And we are all caught in that inescapable network of mutuality, is what Dr. King would say. And so it's not just about my own individual rights, but it's how those individual rights play out in a communal sense, and, you know, and how I may inadvertently cause harm to other people. And I need to be cognizant of that. And that's sometimes where, you know, the faith can call us to sacrifice, right? That, you know, I understand that wearing a mask requires sacrifice, or social distancing requires sacrifice, or getting a vaccine calls, you know, requires sacrifice. At the same time, I'm willing to do those things because I also realize I have a greater moral responsibility to caring for my neighbor, and that I am not in a vacuum, and that my life is not all about me either. And so that's a bit of the challenge. I mean, I was really impressed with what the Pope said recently, talking about that we have a moral obligation to get vaccinated, that getting vaccinated is an act of love, is the way the Pope called it. That's really impressive, because I think he understands that we are in that kind of network of mutuality, and we're all tied together, and that you can't just see this as an individual choice, but it has to be an individual choice understood within the common good.
You know, I have talked to people who are deep, just rooted deep in their faith and in the Lord. They're rooted deep in their faith in Christ, and almost feel that if they get the vaccine, that they're turning their back on the healing powers of Christ. That it's almost as if they are as if they're putting more faith in the vaccine than they are in Christ. What What's the message to people that may be struggling with that?
Well, healing comes in so many ways, and we have to realize that this world was made so that we can try to find those ways of healing. It's not just through our thinking, our belief. It's through serving and thinking and coming up and being creative with ideas and how we can come up with ways that will benefit humanity. It's not just thinking our way through this. It's being part of that community I'm talking about. And that community includes doctors and nurses and scientists that have worked their entire lives trying to figure out ways to heal people with the resources that God has given us. And so I say, let's try all of those things.
Well, and last week too, I gave you that example of the man who was, you know, standing there in the flood, right, and waiting on top of his house. And of course, you know, he refused to listen to the evacuation orders. And then a boat came to rescue him, and he said, "No, I have faith in God. God will save me." And then a helicopter came to rescue him as the floodwaters were getting higher, and he turned that helicopter away and said, "No, God will save me." And ultimately, the man drowns and gets to heaven, and he asks God, "No, why didn't you save me?" And he said, "Well, I sent an evacuation order, a boat, and a helicopter." You know, at some point, you also have to realize that this vaccine can be part of how to deal with this suffering and injustice and pain and, you know, problems that are happening in this world. I think that, you know, we also live in a country that I would say is prone to what I would call American exceptionalism. We all think we're an exception. We all think that nothing will happen to me until it does. We all think that we, you know, can beat this virus. We all think that this will, nothing bad will ever happen. We're all thinking that we're an exception. The problem is 865,000 Americans were not that exception. 26,000 parents have realized that their children, sadly, were not that exception. And I think that that's some of the challenge, too, that we have to have the humility to realize that help comes in lots of different forms and healing comes in lots of different forms, as Harry was saying. And there's an opportunity there to also acknowledge that, you know, we need to realize our own humility and realize that, yes, we are all individuals and we are exceptional individuals. But at the same time, you know, we also need to not have kind of that sense of pride go with before the fall, and that we need to recognize that there is an importance of humility and that we are very common as well.
Well, you know, I think this is something that is so important. And that this conversation is approached from a point of respect and love, which I appreciate from the both of you. And I appreciate First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe taking a loving, welcoming effort towards vaccinating our community. Again, next Monday is a vaccination clinic that's taking place. While supplies last, hot chocolate and marshmallows. If Big Daddy and I don't get there before everybody, no, I'm kidding. But just a really wonderful opportunity to visit with people that you could pray with, that you can have a cup of cocoa with, you can build community and do our part. Now, any final thoughts for our listening audience out there before we end this segment?
I would just close with that sense of the greatest sacrifice you can make is caring for others and just finding ways to serve. I think there's lots of different ways that our community and our world needs service. And I think don't get so caught up in the abstract and theoretical, but find real tangible ways to put love into action and to serve. And there's so many different ways that folks can do that. And I think that that's one of the really key things I would encourage people of faith and people across the board. Find different ways to serve. I mean, that's not just in the COVID sense. There's so many people and so much need out there right now. I mean, there's pets that are being, you know, orphaned. There's kids that are being orphaned. I mean, there's so many different ways that you can find to serve in our community right now. You know, obviously working at the, you know, interfaith homeless shelter, there's opportunities there. So I would just kind of close with that I think it's really, really important that we, you know, we continue to keep the focus where it needs to be, which is how can we be servant leaders in our faith.
And I would close just with a blessing we say every week in church that we've done for the last number of years from John Philip Newell, a Celtic teacher, which is part of our Presbyterian tradition, the Celtic spirituality. And it goes like this: in body, mind, and spirit, may you be well this day, and may you be strong for the work of healing in the world. Amen.
Amen. Well, thank you so much for that. I really appreciate First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe doing this vaccination clinic. I know that it got headlines across the country, didn't it? It seemed like is what my understanding was when I saw some of that.
Yes, it did. We're glad for that.
Now, again, next Monday, sign up today through the New Mexico Department of Health, vaccinenm.org. 12 o'clock starts at 12. And, you know, I hope that this is a difficult conversation for communities across our country. And I'm sure it's a difficult conversation for many of our churches that are in this community of ours and across the country. First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe, you clearly outlined why you decided to get involved and do this. And it's my hope and my prayer that other churches will follow. Churches are a place where people can find comfort and prayer from people that they love and that they trust. And it's my prayer that other churches here will consider it. I'm sure you're open to, you know, I'm sure you have a lot of maybe lessons that you could share as when you first started your first vaccination clinic and kind of, you know, a lot of great how to do your vaccination clinic at the church. They could probably call you guys and get some help.
Absolutely. And we're seeing a lot more churches follow along. I mean, I know Lutheran Church of the Servant is wanting to do a vaccine host a vaccine clinic, and they're kind of putting in for that. The Seventh-day Adventist Church is doing that. Santa Maria did one very early on at the beginning of the pandemic. And so, you know, we're always happy to help. We realize that this work isn't all about us, that, you know, we want this work to be spread throughout the community and to have as, you know, equip and engage as many of people as we can across our community. And so, you know, we're happy to be a resource to other churches, other faith leaders, other synagogues, you know, rabbis, happy to help with all of that. And so, you know, we're more than glad to. And I think it's been great. I mean, no one puts a light under a bushel basket. And so part of our hope in the witness is not just to shine the light upon us, but to encourage others to do some good in the world too. So it's been great to see some of that uptake by other faith communities.
Well, thank you so much, Andrew Black, Harry Eberts, First Presbyterian Church of Santa Fe.